Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. But coming from north end of the Northern Island of New Zealand, I have Sarah Greener. Sarah has developed a framework based on her own business journey to help busy, stressed, and overworked business owners reignite their passion for business by helping them work on their business rather than in their business. Yeah, definitely want to talk about that. It's one of my favorite topics. Absolutely. Because for many business owners, we, you know, both of us feel, I'm guaranteed we both feel this, is not enough time. I think most business owners think there's not enough time to do the things that really count in your life. Sarah is passionate about business, mostly small ones. And for the past 7 years, Sarah has been helping busy, stressed, overworked business owners transform their businesses and reignite their passion for what they started out to do, which is exactly what we're going to be talking about, how the tips and tricks to do that. So growing up in a family that ran on business and keen entrepreneurial spirit gave Sarah a thorough grounding in the fundamentals. From there, she went on to running her own and running multiple businesses in New Zealand and overseas. I'm not going to read the rest of that, Sarah, because there's so many questions I want to ask you about you and everything that I so welcome.
Hey, nice to be here.
Now, by the time people will be watching this, it'll be winter. We're both sitting here in summer gear, and you've got a cyclone going on in your back window. So it's kind of, we'll just class it as winter rain, huh?
Yeah, it's like they knew we were going to record this and you were going to put it live in winter, and so it gave us some wintry weather today.
Yeah, you're certainly blowing a gale back there. And so I'm not going to get distracted. So you grew up in family businesses and have your own business. So tell me a little bit more about you and, you know, as you growing up as a child and how that was. And were they always successful? That's another question, isn't it?
That's a bit of a journey, I think, all of them. And I think there's successful moments and not so successful moments. So my parents actually started out on a big farm. So I was on a big farm in the King Country here in New Zealand, 2,500 acres. And when my dad got to 40, he had what you would probably call a midlife crisis at the time, and decided that the people up in Auckland and the big cities weren't doing a very good job of selling the meat that he was doing a very good job of producing. And so he decided he could do it better, and off he went to Auckland to sell meat. And so for a long time, he commuted from the farm where us kids were growing up to up there. And that was kind of our first experience. And so he started doing that. And then he got involved with the team at the warehouse. We have a big red shed here. It was a successful business, so I guess about, it started being built about 30 years ago, and he got involved with them, putting the butcher store in there. And then from there, got involved with a company lots of people will be familiar with McDonald's, because he designed a way to make ready-made meals. And so all the way along this journey, us kids worked for love,
which is meant to, exactly.
So we worked for love. So I'm the eldest of four girls, and when we had the butcher shop, the meat shop inside the warehouse, we cooked fried sausages out the front to cook to sell the sausages inside, and we had massive competitions between all of us four girls about who had sold the most each day. And when we worked in with McDonald's doing these ready-made meals, dinners that they eventually stopped doing, we helped out with that too, because Dad designed a whole system that used a robot to plate the food. And sometimes the robot would have a tizzy and throw everything everywhere. And so you'd be cleaning up at 1 o'clock in the morning because something had gone wrong with the robot.
So far ahead of time, though, isn't it?
It was, yeah. Dad was definitely, with his concepts and the way he wanted to do it, he was a long way ahead. So I was doing that. So I'm in my 40s now, and that was 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago that they were doing that. Yeah, so definitely way ahead of its time. And yeah, so we had that experience, and then the meat business selling into hotels and restaurants. So that was kind of my journey and my introduction in business. So from the time I was 13, mum and dad were always doing some sort of business. And even younger than that, they had us kids running little businesses. We sold pine cones down at the local garage, the fuel station, petrol station. And we did, we used to dig out the sheep poo from underneath the wool shed and sell that to people for their rose garden.
I was going to ask the meat, I'm assuming it was lamb and mutton.
Yeah, lamb and beef and lamb. And so we call
it was beef as well, because I'm thinking McDonald's. I don't know many lamb burgers at McDonald's.
So it was beef and lamb, and then the kind of the way that Dad went into it was that he was looking at it going, well, we can't just be a commodities-based product. It's the adding of the value of the meals that gives us the value. And so the ready-made meals that we made were, you know, lamb shank and chicken curry. So they were all different meats, not just our meats. So it was kind of a branch off from the farm. We were way away from our farming background, little farmers.
It's so far ahead of its time. In Australia, we've got, you know, those different food things now that you can order pre-packed meals and have them delivered. But that is way ahead of
time.
Obviously, your parents were real forward thinkers into.
Yeah, absolutely. They will, and it still are today, you know, so it's just something that they've always kind of done. So there were definitely times it worked. And then, unfortunately, with the ready-made meals, it was about the time when 9/11 happened and they had all the anthrax scares, and McDonald's got really serious about the food control and the ability to protect their food chain, and we couldn't, I think at the time, and I'm going to remember this incorrectly because I was a teenager, so it's a long time ago now, but that they, if something was injected into the meals, that our sealed process would remove it from the process, and we couldn't prove that. They couldn't prove it with the McDonald's versions either, but because we were new, so they wrapped that up and stopped the program. But it was a really interesting experience at a young age.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So for you then, I mean, that's a really good grounding in business. But were you, you know, did you finish school or uni or wherever you did, and went, okay, I'm going into my own business, or think because of that grounding, what can I do to have my own business? Or did what everyone else did and say, I need to get a job? Or were you just sort of, oh, I'm not going to work for someone else. I'm out there working for myself.
Yeah. So I was going to be a farmer right up until I was 15. And then I decided I was going to be a business owner. And people always used to say to me, what sort of business are you going to own? I'm like, doesn't matter. I'm just going to own a business. So I actually went and worked full time as an accountant while I studied for my business degree. So did a business degree majoring in marketing accounting. So I did do the foundations there, but didn't really go and work other than like part-time jobs to pay for university and things like that. So worked the accountancy and then had my part-time jobs that helped pay for all of that, and then went and helped when this all took off with McDonald's. Mum and dad needed some help in that business, in the meat business, so I helped run that for a few years, and then headed off overseas to go and do what most New Zealanders do our big OE, and I got as far as Thailand. And fell in love with the country and with scuba diving, and later on met my now husband on a beach in Thailand. So he was running a kayaking business over there. And so I'll tell you that I helped, and he would tell you that I interfered. And so we ran a wee kayaking business over there for, I was there for 4 years with him. So
what nationality was he?
He's actually English. He'd escaped England and ended up on a beach in Thailand and was running this kayaking business, and so I helped him out with that for a few years. And then we came back to New Zealand for one of my sister's weddings, and my dad said, oh, you got to go and show Johnny that boat in the Bay of Islands. That would work really well where you live in Thailand. So we came up and we looked at this said boat, and the owner said to us, oh, well, I'm thinking about selling, and do you know anyone who might be interested in buying it? And my poor then boyfriend, who had no idea what I was like at the time, was sitting at the bar with me, and I said, we'll buy it. Johnny just about fell off the seat. And 6 months later, we owned it. So we owned this very odd looking boat that was an old car ferry with 10 bedrooms on top of it. And we ran overnight cruises, and we still do run overnight cruises here in the Bay of Islands. So
that was it. Fantastic. On that same boat still?
On that same boat still, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. So what other businesses have you got your fingers and toes dipped into now?
So we are right back to just the tourism business and my coaching business. But along the way, we've been in hospitality. So we've owned some restaurants. We've done e-commerce. We've been in retail. We've been in, travel and bookings. So everything sort of along the way as we went.
Very, very cool. And that's such a wide variety then. So it means that you're able to come into with your coaching business to help people from all different aspects, and mostly working with women, Sarah?
Yeah, definitely. So mostly with women. I have a few couples in there, but I would suggest that potentially the husbands and partners have been dragged along by the wives into the community, but definitely mostly with women.
Yeah. And what do you notice? Is there anything that sort of stands out when you're, you know, starting working with women? So is it in the startup phase? Well, it's a couple of questions here. Startup phase, or as they're taking it to the next level? And or what is there anything particular that you notice that starts to hold women back from either starting up or moving into, you know, investing time, money, you know, to grow the business?
Yeah, so don't generally work with startups. I've got the odd person that's like, oh, please take me. But mostly I'm working with women with existing businesses. So they have a business that's working, and it's making them work really hard. So I think the number one thing that I see is that they're working really, really hard. And by that, I mean really long hours and not getting paid what they're worth and feeling really overwhelmed. And so we look at that kind of whole picture of what's causing this reason that these women are overwhelmed. Generally, the women I work with wear more than one hat. They're not just a businesswoman. They also tend to have a partner, a husband, a wife, whoever at home. And they also tend to have some sort of dependence. So for some of them, that's young children. For some of them, that's elderly parents. Every now and then I get people that don't have any dependents, but for the most part, people are wearing multiple hats.
And that, I know I've worked in, you know, senior leadership roles, and as well as running my own business, and then in my own business during, you know, the last 40 years of phases of my life, and all of that changes as you go through each phase and those responsibilities. I laugh at those charts, you know, when it talks about having a balanced life. But, you know, what is balanced for a 30-year-old mum with two young kids is completely different than what it would be for me. You know, that's I don't have to worry about any dependents whatsoever. And they all grown and look after themselves. And yes, yeah, so that balance for me, I can put a lot more time into my business, and I can also put a lot more time into recreation. And that, if you've got young kids and that, trying to be super mum. I spoke to someone earlier today, and that was the conversation, is this super mums, and everything has to look perfect so that it's, you demonstrate that you can manage it all. It's a different space, isn't it? But you must be finding that with those women and how they cope with that.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting world that we live in, where we're telling people to have balance. Well, what is balance? It kind of means that there's two sides of the scale. And for me, I think, well, is that good and bad, or just work life? And why is work and life on separate sides of the scale? Like, for me, there's a whole lot of questions around what that looks like. Because as a mother, I can assure you there's some bits of being a mum that I love, and there's a bits of being a mum that I really don't. And being in business, there's some bits that I really love and some bits that I really don't. And so for me, I've stopped trying to look for balance. I did for years, and I just felt like I was constantly not meeting the mark, because I was constantly being judged somewhere. I was either not being mum enough in some way, shape or form, whether that be home baking for bake sales or pickups or drop-offs, or I wasn't being...
That's what shops are for. Come on, Sarah.
exactly. The things I've learned. Or on the flip side, I wasn't being businessy enough. I remember being questioned for leaving a business association meeting early because Scarlett was very small and I needed to go home and feed her, both for my own benefit and for hers, and being questioned on it. So I was always not enough somewhere for someone, and I was constantly trying to live up to all these other people's expectations. And it wasn't until I sat back and, like you were saying before, about kind of these chapters, 25-year-old Sarah, when we first bought the boat business and just had that, my husband and I then were living on the boat and breathing the boat. We had a lot of time just to run the business and, like you say, do fun stuff together as a couple. And then fast forward 5 years and we had a baby on the way and a house to, mortgage to hold down. And so there was a different chapter in my life. And so trying to fulfill or put myself into all these holes and create the balance that other people said I needed to create was just impossible. And so took stepping back and going, what does this next chapter of my life look like for me, for Sarah, like from 30 to 40? What do I want my life to look like with Johnny and Scarlett and the businesses that I want to run? And when I started doing that, I started changing what I had. And that really did include not having, at one point we had 5 businesses on the run and, a team of nearly 100 people across all of them. It was just insanity. And it wasn't what I wanted. Yet, because I was so busy looking at the day-to-day and just surviving, I couldn't get out of it. So that chapter thing's really important.
And being able to step back and look at things is when you're in it, it's really hard to do that. And when someone says, oh, you need to step back and look at what you're doing, and it's pulling your hair out and screaming, you've got to be kidding. I don't have the time to stop and breathe, let alone step back and do that. But it's such a valuable exercise to do, because when you do that, you start to recognize you actually can make choices, and they might be different choices, especially if things are overwhelming you or you're not working your passion.
Oh, I think that's so important. And that's the thing I think women often come up against, is that they're so busy in that day-to-day. And exactly that, how the hell am I supposed to stop, Sarah? There's so much going on. How am I possibly supposed to get to a point where I can stop and look at this? And my only argument for that is you are currently building a business that you don't love. Mm-hmm. And until you stop and take time to start building a business you do love, it's going to keep growing. And businesses are monsters, right? They'll eat all the time and money that you give them. And the more time and money you give them, the more they want. And so you have to push pause and spend some time thinking about, what does this need to look like for me long term? Because it's supposed to serve your life, not be your life. And I find we spend a lot of time business being our life.
I like that framework, serve your life. That I haven't heard it phrased like that before, but that's exactly what that your business needs to do, is serve your life, not run your life, and control it. I've certainly learned now at my age that the most important thing, anything that you do, anytime, anywhere, business life, anything, is to look after your health and well-being.
Oh, yeah, so important. So important. Because if you're not, you and I are not in the best and now looking after our own best interests, our own well-being, then how are we possibly going to look after anyone else's? And that was definitely a mistake I made repetitively, until I was working 60 to 100 hours a week and thinking, I just keep going. I was just so high functioning and at going and living on adrenaline that I had no idea how poorly I was doing all those external important relationships and the internal ones in terms of my business, but also my marriage and my parenting. And I was doing a really poor job of it in hindsight, because I can see it now clearly from a learning phase. At the time, I was so deeply in that piece of, how can I stop? How can I possibly go to the gym and look after my body or drink water or eat the right foods? I barely have time to grab a chocolate bar and a Coke as I'm running home from work, So I think I'd love it not to be something that comes with wisdom, but sometimes you do go through that experience to get that wisdom. And I hope that there are other women who are just starting out that watch this and look at you and I and think, oh, well, I can do that from the start instead of learning it partway through.
Absolutely. You can't get it back. It's just got to be. I remember when I was in my late 30s, and my brother-in-law, I was teaching aerobics. I taught aerobics for 10 years, And I used to, you know, do a fair bit of other exercise as well. And my brother-in-law said to me, well, how long can you keep this up? Not the amount that I was doing, but how long can you keep exercising? I've sort of gone, I don't know, until the day I kick off this earth, I suppose. You know, that was my answer. It changed over time, obviously, you know, not teaching 16 aerobic classes a week and running and things like that, but it's still constant. It's still a daily experience, whether it might be stretching or walking or whatever, but it's got to be something. You've got to look after your health. It's without a doubt the most important thing, because you can't make any decisions based from a place of lack, whether it's lack of money or lack of experience, lack of knowledge. But lack of health is the biggest thing that holds people back, without a doubt.
Yeah, and I think the thing we make decisions from that place all the time, and making them from lack means more lack often going forward. And often we make the easy decision rather than the right decision for us, because when we're working at peak performance and we're looking after our bodies, which means we're looking after our brains because they're so interlocked to each other, we make better decisions because our brain health is at a stage where we've got more capacity to make better decisions rather than just making a decision that's easy. Sometimes we make the decision that is not to make a decision because that's easier than making one, but long term the consequences,
it's still a decision though, isn't it?
It's still a decision, absolutely. Yeah. And it just you know, I remember a mentor saying to me, most humans stay twice as long as they should in relationships and businesses that aren't working. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. And that was certainly true for me when we were in the hospitality business. We certainly stayed in that far longer than we should have. And it was, you know, about doubles, probably about bang on the money. Yeah. You should have got out earlier. And that's just delaying those decisions, thinking you can, if I just work harder, if I just do more, eventually we'll get out of this. But it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that. I know, and regular listeners of the podcast will have heard me say this before, I know when I was in the GM role, there was just so much stress in that. I had my business going on the side. I did shift to a 5-day fortnight, so that was a really positive move. But then I was caring for sick parents during that time as well, so that wasn't helpful. But I stayed in that role too long, and then the universe provided me with somebody that came into the workforce and created that catalyst where I went, I don't need to be here copying this. And I listened, thank you. But it's sometimes we don't pay attention to those moments where we need to make a decision. And fortunately for me, I'll call it catalyst again. When that person came in, it wasn't that dramatic. You know, there was no mental health breakdown or anything like that. Yeah. But but if I had stayed continually, the bullying and all that would have certainly caused a great deal of dis-ease and stress. So yes, it's paying attention to those reminders, isn't it, that we've got, okay, you need to be listening right now.
So we talk about it in terms of the universe sends us three types of messages. It sends us feathers, it sends us bricks, and it sends us tracks. And if you are aware enough to notice the feathers, which are gentle, tickly messages, you know, almost that gut intuition, I shouldn't be here, then we can move out of the way of the brick, because when the brick comes, it hurts more, leaves a bruise, leaves a mark. And we certainly want to feel the brick, because if we don't notice the brick, or if we just brush it off like not something that's redirecting us, we're definitely going to get the track. And the track hurts and leaves permanent damage. So same sort of theory, where you say it's a catalyst, potentially your catalyst was a bit of a brick. And you didn't have to wait around for that Mack truck, because you were like, well, that's a brick, I'm out, you know. And for all of us, being aware of what those messages are and being really aware and going, well, this is a redirection piece here, is so important.
No, I love that analogy with the feather, the brick, and the Mack truck. And a friend of mine, he literally got hit by a truck.
Yeah.
And there was so many changes he needed to make, but it wasn't till he got hit by a truck.
Yeah.
That he got, well, after, you know, a few months in hospital, he had to make those changes. There was no other options. Yeah. So looking, how can women in business, you know, what can they do to apply? I know you have rules of business or something that they can do to ensure the best results, so they're not making decisions based from a shortfall or a sense of lack, and they've got the capacity to have that success that they want.
Yeah, well, first I think is deciding what does success look like for you, because we live in a world now where there's blasted images of what success should look like. We're talking about the, you know, what should you do as a parent? What should you, you know, showing up a certain way as a mum, being super mum? And I think figuring out what that looks like for you, because we can get really caught up in what everyone else is telling us great looks like. And if you don't stop and go, well, what would great look like for me? You end up chasing someone else's dream. And that was really true for me, and that I hadn't stopped to pause and go, I actually don't want bigger and better. I don't want more employees. I don't want my name over the building. I actually want something quite different. I want the ability to be location free. I want the ability to travel with my family. I want, you know, talking to my daughter, like, what does a great mum look like? And it was all about certain specific quality time things that I needed the flexibility to do that. And the businesses we had didn't allow that. And so I had to change my life. So I think the very first thing is, where do you want to be? And I don't mean next year or, you know, in a few months' time. I mean 5 to 10 years from now. And for some of you who are going, oh, I don't know where I'm going to be next week. I get that. But you can be anywhere you want 10 years from now. You just have to decide and figure out what that looks like. And so the process we go through is we figure out what actually matters to you in this life chapter that you're in right now. What are your priorities?
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's all part of going through what do you value, what your beliefs are, and what do you value. And when I work with people, we get down those two top values. And if you can live your life or your business around those values, it makes a, you know, it certainly makes it fun to get up in the morning and do what you're doing and continue to do it. I know, and this is the thing in the stage of life where I am now. My business is a huge success. One, it's financially successful. I get to work with the people I love to work with, and my mission is to enable people to do what they don't believe is possible. So I get to do that every single day. I get to see my grandchildren and play with my grandchildren. I get, you know, we go away for long weekends once a month and then travel for a couple of months each year as well. And, you know, got the van and the whole thing's happening. It's just, that's success to me. I don't need $1 million business. I just have everything that's in it, or, you know, multi-million dollar home. Everything is just nice. It's just right. And that's, so finding that, I love what you said about finding what success means to you.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And so, yes, do I look at what other people have got and I go, oh, that sounds amazing. And, you know, oh, that, you know, and I kind of collect bits from other people's lives and I go, well, maybe that's what my life will look like 10 years from now, and I add to it over time. But really getting clear on what are those things, like you say, your values that we say highest life priorities, but, you know, what are those areas of your life that matter most to you, and what do you want them to look like? Because if it looks like being able to have a long weekend every month when you're whatever age you're going to be, so for me 10 years from now would be 51, then I need to start thinking about how do I create that now? Because if I build a business that requires me to, for example, work on the weekends, so we're in hospitality and tourism, biggest times of, you know, busiest time in the business, weekends, school holidays. So I probably don't want to be in that industry, or I need to build a business that those weekends are managed and created and made great by someone else other than me. And so those are the things that when you stop and look at where you want to be long term, you can make better decisions today that will fulfill that.
Right, that makes so much sense. So the first one then is look at those priorities and work towards them. Any other rules of business that you can suggest and pass on?
Yeah, so I think the other thing that I would say is that we want to take time each week to be really careful about where we're spending our time. Mm-hmm. One of the things, you know, there's never enough time. You started right back at the beginning saying, oh, in business is never enough time. And there's not, because you think you can do everything and you're trying to do everything. And I grew up in a generation, and I'm very grateful for it, where my parents said, oh, well, girls can do anything. So I was the eldest of four girls on a big farm, and people always used to say to my dad, oh, don't you wish you had boys instead of girls? And dad would say, well, my girls can do anything your boys can do. They just have to do it smarter.
I love that.
Yeah, so good, right? We were like, it became a bit of a like a competitive piece in our family where, you know, yeah, if we could do it faster and better than the boys, we would. But I think the key here is I always heard you can do everything, you can do everything, you can do everything. But what it was really was you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And that's the real caveat that's so important, is that you have to put down some of the things. Mm-hmm. And the way that I do that is by investing 1 hour a week to get back my other 167. And so every week on a Thursday, I plan next week. And I plan it in alignment with my values or my highest life priorities and where I want to be 10 years from now. I start doing things today that future Sarah will be really grateful for. I work out 5 days a week. I move my body 5 days a week because 51-year-old Sarah will be happy when she can get out of bed each day because she's looked after the one body that she's got. I work
correct
on.
Yep. Yeah. Those aching little moments, you know, those twice. Oh, yeah. Found that one.
Yeah, exactly. And I drink water, and I'm investing time because my daughter will be 21 in 10 years. And I want to have a certain relationship with her. And so I have that relationship with her at 21 by investing the time now. We just, I spent last week at school camp, which was amazing. And then on Saturday night, we went to Ed Sheeran for her first big concert.
Oh, experience. Wow. Very cool.
So I'm spending time and investing in things that will give me that life then. So the same thing with my business. I want a business that's location free. So I'm not spending a lot of time investing in showing up and doing face-to-face workshops in my local community, because that's not where I want to be necessarily. And so I need to be building a business that exposes me to more people that aren't just in the Bay of Islands in New Zealand. You know, talking to you, Janine, is a perfect example of that. It's a future action. It's a future driven action that means I'm not just limited to my actual location. I can have some location freedom. And so taking that 1 hour a week and looking at everything I want to do in the week and plugging it in, so that instead of doing a to-do list, I'm doing a process of going, here's all the things I could do next week that move me closer to my goals. Mm-hmm. Here's the time frames, and then investing them into time so that there's no more wish lists of things that I could do, because what happens is I always kept doing the things that were fastest and easier because I got an endorphin buzz off ticking the easy ones. Now I know the things that are in my calendar are the important things that will move me towards the life and business that I want.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And as we said earlier, you know, things change throughout your life, so you can, you know, pick up the things. And as I said, I'm sort of living that space now. And, you know, the weekends, if we're not traveling somewhere or away, they're for the grandchildren, because that's a high priority. And the relationships building with them is something that's so important. Thing is, you don't care about your kids anymore. You just care about the grandkids.
My dad always says, he's like, if we knew grandkids were going to be so cool, maybe we would have been nicer to you lot.
Oh, I like that too.
Yeah, no, my parents are exactly the same, as like, how can we have time with the grandkids, you know, rather than, you know, building something that's big and time expensive, they're building something that allows them to do something with grandkids long term.
And I, you know, I've got a lot of friends at the moment that have their own businesses, and they're in the space where they're ready to retire. Mm. And it's not part of my vocabulary, that word, because I don't find that necessary with what I do to do that. But then before they do, they're trying to find something to do. And again, that's a planning thing, isn't it? You know, what do you wish that you have? And my husband's done that so well. He retired a couple of years ago, but he does wood turning. And so he's just spending his day doing something he absolutely loves and turning timber. But it's really hard, and we mentioned, to step back and look at that when you're juggling everything. And again, it's that I've got to do it right and I've got to look because people will judge me. But how do we know what to drop?
The things that won't break. And fundamentally, you know, because if you think about it like juggling balls, there are some balls in your life that are glass balls. They're incredibly precious. If you drop them, they break. And there are some things that you've got up in the air because somebody threw them at you and you just keep juggling them. And for me, you have to figure out what are your glass balls. For me, it's this body, this brain that I have here. Like there's one of it and I need to look after it. It's my relationship with my husband. I don't want to drop that. I want to invest time, money and energy in it. My relationship with my daughter, time, money and effort into that. Having a clean house. That's a ball I can drop, you know, doing the laundry. I have enough clothes that I don't have to do laundry every week. You know, like there are some things that are societal expectations that were balls that were thrown to me that I don't need to keep juggling that I can put down. For me, I let go of lots of the traditional things that the mum and their wife would do right from a very early start. Someone gave me some advice. So get a cleaner, Sarah, because
that's one thing I tell people to do all the time. I have friends that were just working crazy hours and they're trying to clean. And I said, get a cleaner. Yeah. And they say, I can't. I've got to do it myself. Get a cleaner. It just won't happen.
There's so much judgment.
Or whatever it is, just to, and you're,
I'm on your page. Yeah. And the reason that we don't is because there's so much judgment around doing it. Like, who are you to, you know, hoity-toity, life to the rich and famous, have a cleaner? Who are you to, you know, think that cleaning's beneath you? I think none of those things. I just think my time's important and I want to invest it in the things that are the highest value to me, and that's hanging out with Scarlett playing a board game, not scrubbing the floor. That doesn't mean I can't do it and I'm not willing to do it. There's obviously times when, you know, we've got lots of flooding up here at the moment and so cleaner can't get through. So we'll do the cleaning as required on a Monday and Tuesday this week. But honestly, like it was the biggest thing I figured out was that overwhelm is a collective thing. It's not just your business, because women come to me all the time and go, I'm really overwhelmed by my business. And I'm like, okay, let's have a look at what else you're doing. And they would, as a general rule, be doing most of the parenting. So the pickups, the drop-offs, the school activities, the birthdays, they would be doing all of the meal planning and the cooking and the cleaning and, well, not all of it. They'll say, oh, well, my husband helps. He does the vacuuming or he puts away the groceries. And I'm like, yeah, but the mental load, you are carrying the entire management load for that house. Mm. And so you add that to your entire management load of running a business, which has other humans in that you're, you know, making sure that they're doing the right things at the right time. No wonder you're overwhelmed. There are so many decisions before you even like get to your business in the morning, from the moment you wake up to the moment you get to your business, you've already done 1,000 things. We need to figure out how to systemize and automate some of that. And we also need to delegate some of it to some of the other humans that live in your household. So that overwhelm piece is huge in business. And if you look at the stats on the results we get as women in business, I think there is definitely a correlation to be drawn between the fact that women still take on 70% of the unpaid labor inside the house, mm-hmm. and the fact that only 12% of female-owned businesses will ever earn more than, you know, of revenue will only ever earn $100,000 more.
Yeah, it's not a lot, is it? And a lot of women have gone into businesses to, you know, particularly I find that they've had some drama happened in their life. It might be a divorce or, you know, moved into a different country or something where they have to achieve and have to have that income. But then they let themselves down a bit because they still treat it like a hobby business instead of a real business. But getting it to that stage where it is a real business and creates a real income for them is, with everything else going on, as you said, especially maybe if they're single parenting, it's a lot to take on.
Yeah, and I think there's that, if when you start out, there's that element of I work in my own business for free because it's cheaper if I do it myself. And you have to get rid of that mentality pretty early on because it keeps you really stuck, because it's not free. My time's not free. Your time's not free. Our time's really valuable. And the more time you spend telling people that you'll do it yourself because it's cheaper, the more you do value your own worth. And that's that whole getting stuck in that kind of almost hobby business, because you can't devalue your worth. You have to value your time so that other people will value it and get out of that, you know, this is just a side hustle that supplements my income, into something that's more long-term and more sustainable, so that you can start to replace yourself in the business and step out.
Yeah. And that part of that balance of then, what should I invest in myself and my business? Mm. But what people often don't realize, that they think that they can do it themselves, they're just repeating the same thing that they've always done without learning any more skills. And it's not going to take their business further. That's a discussion I have a lot, and had one the other day with somebody who booked in for a program and then said, oh, I've got that. Well, no, they didn't. My partner said, I've already got those skills. I don't really need to be doing that training.
Right.
And I went back and said, it was about speaking. So how often do you get the opportunity to speak from stage? How much can you sell from stage? How successful have you been getting bookings to speak? How, you know, it was a whole lot of questions like that, and came back without the answers. But I know this person's going to be doing the same poor results that they've got now will be exactly the same in 6 months' time because of that. This one, I really feel it was a lack of belief in their capacity to achieve the results that they want and the success they want. But there's so many reasons that people get stuck in that. I can't afford to invest, or I'm not worthwhile investing in, which they don't recognize that's actually the underlying reason. Or yeah. Someone else is telling them they're not worthwhile investing.
Yeah. I think that one's a really big one. I think, you know, it's a hard one. I think unpacking it, there's a whole lot of beliefs that you pick up along the journey, from family, from friends, from teachers, all the way along. And then you also have, you know, societal layers as well. And this is where I think as women, we've got so much work to do to unpack not just our familiar layers and our experiential layers, but we've also got societal layers that we've got to unpack, because as a general rule, we're told that our time is free. Like, we should cook and clean and do all those things for no return other than the love of our families. So and while I love my love from my families, you know, the whole family creates the work here at home, and so we'll all create it. And so getting them to do something different is really hard when you're in that place where it's just, well, but these $25 an hour jobs, I can do those for free and then not pay the cash out. And we did this the other day where we talked about those as future stealers. And so we talk about the future stealers and the future creators. And I think getting people to understand that if they're speaking from stage, if they're able to sell from stage, those are future creators. To be able to stand on stage for an hour or 2 hours or even less and sell thousands of dollars of what you do is a future creator, versus playing small and speaking for free and not getting the opportunity to sell from stage is a future stealer. Mm-hmm. And our value void as a business owner falls in between those two things. And so we've got to get ourselves out of those future stealers just one at a time and into those future creators. And did this process with someone not long ago, and they were really sucked into the social media world of creating content and putting content out, and it was costing them about 12 hours a week. And I was like, you can outsource that. And they were like, I said, so if you stopped doing that and you could pay someone, let's say $50 an hour or thereabouts to do that for you, and you could be in your zone of genius where you're creating lots of future for yourself, that, you know, what sort of value does that look like? Is it $1,000 an hour? Is it more? And they were like, oh, it's at least $1,000 an hour. And turns out, when we calculated that out, it was like $900,000 a year she was missing out on by staying stuck, playing small, doing these things she could outsource to someone else. And that's exactly what you're saying, is that these people have to understand they can step into a bigger, bolder way of being if they think about this: is this creating my future or is this stealing from my future? Because it's really easy to make a localized decision. What's easy today? It's easy not to sign up to the course and push myself outside my comfort zone with Janine and start getting up on stage and speaking in a different way and selling from stage, versus actually stepping into that space and doing that. And it's deeply uncomfortable, and it's going to require me to grow, but it's also going to be something my future self thanks me for.
Yeah, no, I love the way you defined that. That makes a whole lot of sense. We could talk for hours
We go.
Quite easily. There's so much commonality here, Sarah. I'm really, really pleased we've had a great conversation. I often ask if there's 3 points that you want people to take away out of the conversation, what would they be?
So I would say overwhelm begins at home. If you're carrying more than your fair share of the load at home, and if you're female, you probably are, like Janine says, get a cleaner at the very least, or get someone to help you out. You can't do everything at home and run a successful business. It's actually not possible. Mm-hmm. You can do anything, but you can't do everything. You've got to stop thinking that you need to do everything in your business and figure out, where do you add the most value? Where are you creating the future you want to live? And where are you stealing from the future you want to live? And stay in the things that create future, not steal it. And then I think the last thing is really comes down to it. I want you to build a sustainable business. And that's not just based on a $1 million top line or a $1 million bottom line. It actually needs to be something that's sustainable for you as long as you want to do it. And that means, you know, you can't go out hot and build a big business that burns you out, because that doesn't serve you or the people that you love. So build a sustainable business in every way, something that you're going to love doing. It sounds to me, Janine, like you've done this, where you get up and you're so excited to do what you do. It doesn't even feel like work. You don't need to retire from it because it doesn't feel like work.
No. Yeah. Monday, sorry, just on the roll. I wake every Monday and go, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I love Mondays.
Yeah. And I don't feel like I need to take a holiday from my business. And on weekends, I'm like, do I have nothing? I could go down and do some of that stuff in my business because I love it and I really enjoy it. I'm the same way. It's taken me some time to get there. And that is a sustainable business. Doesn't mean there aren't things in my business that are a bit crappy that I don't love to do, but the majority of it's great. And so that's sustainable for me because I can do that for a long time because I love it. I love my clients. I love people I work with. I love doing this stuff. You know, I'm really, really, really pleased with the business I've built and the life I've built.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And that's what, you know, we wish for it, every woman in business is to be able to create that and create something that they absolutely love. I had an interview with somebody this morning, and with her and four friends, they were made redundant. So they came from logistics. So they went in and started a freight forwarding business between the four of them that's highly successful. And it was just, it's just that love. And it wasn't, you know, she said at 5-year-old, she didn't say, I want to be a freight forwarder. But it's solving problems is what she just loves doing. And so she's doing what she loves. And that's the method of her doing that. You know, it's.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Because if you can find something that feels like that, that feels like a fun challenge to solve for you every day, then you're going to get up like you do on a Monday and go, let's go. I'm so excited.
It's Monday. Awesome. Yeah. And this year, Tuesday is a golf day. So that's.
Ah, nice.
Well, yeah. But it's okay. What's happening for the week? And I have it all written, planned, and things I want to do. Yeah, obviously spend quite a bit of time in it, but I don't mind. If I've gone and played golf on a Tuesday morning, I don't mind on Tuesday night that I'll still be sitting in front of the computer at 8 o'clock because I'm doing, you know, the things that I love to do, or I'm coaching people or whatever it is, because it fits. Beautiful. There's so much great information there, Sarah. I am so pleased with our conversation and the value that you've been able to offer the listeners with, you know, great ideas on how to create that sustainable, successful business. It's been wonderful. Is there anything you want to add before we finish up?
No, just that if what we've talked about today resonates with you, then your business can be better and life can be better. So you can head on over to my website. I've got a page there especially for Janine's listeners with We Are Women, where you can get access to some complimentary resources for you. So I've got my story, the book that I wrote about kind of my journey from that 60 to 100 hours down to what I'm doing now, and the processes are all in there for you. So love to see you head on over there and grab some things that help you out, because we really do want you to build that sustainable business like we have.
Oh, that's fantastic. No, that's a great offer. And the website is it? Tell me, I'm looking at.
Yeah, that all good. It's sarahgreener.com, and then it's / We Are Women.
Okay, excellent. So Sarah, and all of the links and everything will be in the show notes. If you can't find it, they'll all definitely be there. Remember, you can find this podcast, if you're just listening, this one and all others on every one of your favorite podcast channels, or you can go to Janine Vosper on YouTube and you can watch. So that way you'll be able to see the weather stop blowing quite as much out your window now.
It's eased a little bit.
It has eased a little bit. So it's not quite hitting as bad. So thank you so much, Sarah, for your contribution to the We Are Women podcast. It's appreciated.
My pleasure. It's been a blast. Thank you.
And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper, your host. Remember, if you want to chat about how, you know, what strategies are best for you in business, in life, then go to janinevosper.com. If I'm not the best person to help you, I have got incredible resources with people from like Sarah and people from all around the world that I can direct you to. So please have the conversation with me. Remember, when you listen, to subscribe and to comment if you're on YouTube. Have a fantastic day, week, month, year, whatever you're doing, and we'll see you, hear you, and the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.